for most of the people that I see around this room, more or less in my own age group, we haven't been faced with this sort of thing too much, and it's really enlightening to hear what's going on in the field of drug taking and this type of new drugs that are coming along the way. The question that I'd like to ask you, Gwen, is: does ADAC work with the school system in getting this type of message across to the young people at an early age and concentrating on the prevention of this sort of thing from happening, as well as hitting the oldsters like ourselves who are over the hill and probably not too much involved in it?
ADAC has developed an excellent school strategy where we've been involved in developing curriculum for grades 4, 5, and 6. And Eldon, is it higher grades than that as well? 4, 7, 9, and 11. So we've been very active in developing curriculum for the schools in Alberta. That curriculum is to be designed or to be presented by teachers in the schools and gives students an awareness of drugs, alcohol, and how to deal with problems like self-esteem, confidence, that kind of thing. So also we have other community events that are coming up in November. The third week of November is the National Addiction Awareness Week. We're going to be having a presentation on Monday, November 21st at the Lethbridge Public Library, which will be open to the public, including youth. Winston Churchill counselors have asked us to come and speak to their students. We're going to be in the Colehurst on November 9th, next Wednesday, speaking to high school students there. So we're trying to get out to young people and especially the Drug Task Forces are also doing an excellent job of reaching out to youth and adolescents in the community and trying to get information out to them as well.
Gwen, yeah. Thanks. Just to supplement what Gwen has said, I really don't have a question, so forgive me for that. I do have a bit more response to Van's question, and that is that in the schools, my name is Carol Steen, a long-time teacher, educator in the school system in Lethbridge. Two more aspects of that answer that might help fulfill that question of Van's. One is that the ADAC folks are very good at providing resource people in our schools, and I know that in several of the high schools in the city, an ADAC representative attends a half day a week and goes into the schools and works with our children right at the school level. And most of that is providing service to clients, information and support services for them. And the second part of that is we have an alert system, which is a partnership with our city police and our schools, public, separate, and private in the city. And we work closely with our nurses through the Chinook Health Region and with the ADAC folks. And those people, the police officers, deliver programs, scheduled and regular programs to our youth in all of our students in the Lethbridge area. And one of those programs, actually two of them, are focused specifically on drug awareness and education. So there's quite a network of information and resource support people for our youth. Doesn't mean the problem's not there, but there is good support for it. So thank you.
Ed Bardock, just a quick question. At the library I've been reading that you talked about addiction. I've been reading that it's such an insidious drug that if young people use it even as few as two or three times, they can become addicted quicker than what would happen with cocaine or heroin. That with the latter two, you can be pulled off and not touch it, but the other two stay residually. Is it that dangerous?
I think it's fair to say that in the popular media, there has been a lot of discussion around the immediate addictiveness of crystal meth and how if you use it once you're addicted. Certainly the research and our experience in our offices isn't supporting that. We're usually finding that clients who experiment with the drug are experimenting with it from 6 months to 2 years before what we would call addictive use is starting to happen.
Thank you. John Boris is my name. And thanks, Gwen. However, my thought as I left there, after I sat and thought about what you were saying, involved everybody but the parents. Now, it seems to me, I'm one of these oldies that Van was talking about, but you know, even my youngest brother is in his 30s, and is that a fact that even those people, or isn't it, are involved in maybe trafficking with this or using it or stuff like that? I think you can't keep just schools involved. You can, it's just school and that's, what else do we do? And I'm not so sure but if you had an involvement by the parents, and I was on the school board years ago, and parents were really key. I'm afraid that what we've forgotten now is forgotten those parents. Now, maybe the parents use the stuff themselves. I don't know, and you can comment on that. But I'm just wondering how much, if any, effort have you made or have you and others made with working with parents? Because I think that is a very, very good aspect of the problem.
That's a very good question, and certainly the parents that we've seen in the clinic and throughout ADAC, parents on the whole are very concerned about what is happening for their children. A lot of times they don't know what to do to help. Certainly in the media we hear that parents aren't involved and that they're using drugs themselves, and certainly that is a small portion of the problem, and outreach needs to be made to those parents. But on the whole, what we're finding, at least in my experience, is that parents are concerned. Many parents are involved on the community drug task forces. We have many parents who come into the clinic to try to find out ways to help their children. And I guess that's the key, is helping parents with information and support. And in my experience, I certainly have found that parents are very active in their desire to get that information and support.
Just one thing on the parents. We have a number of information resources for parents on our website, adac.com. So, yes, we do very much focus on parents. In terms of our prevention strategy, we're looking at prevention sort of holistically. We look at the drug, but we look at the environment as well, and we also look at risk and protective factors in the person and in the environment. And certainly, probably the greatest source of risk for young people probably would be, in fact, the family. But the family is also the greatest source of protection. So the family is very, very significant to us. One of the things that interests us in terms of our family work is that through our treatment programs, when we work with an addicted parent, and we work with tens of thousands of addicted clients around the province a year. In fact, here in Lethbridge alone last year, we had over 1,300 new admissions. So many of these individuals are, in fact, addicted parents. So we see this as a tremendous opportunity, actually, to break the intergenerational cycle of abuse by providing these parents with resources, information. And keep in mind that a lot of parents, they often hide in isolation and silence for many, many years before they come forward. So we really want to encourage our stakeholders and other agencies and groups in the community who work with parents, if they have a problem with addiction themselves, please come forward, look for some assistance and help. So I guess what I'm trying to say is, yes, parents are very important to us, and the family is also very important. I could carry on in terms of other groups that are also important. But I'll leave it there for now. Thank you.
Ruth Alzinga, my question has to do with pregnancies. You know, we've talked about fetal alcohol syndrome from parents who have mothers who have been drinking. And if this is to be a hit and makes girls feel joyful, and if something should happen, what happens to those children who might be conceived when someone is taking crystal meth?
That's a really good question, Ruth, and I'm looking at my friends back there at the table, my friends from formerly known as First Steps. I'm not sure what your formal title is now, but all my friends back there that work with pregnant women in our community and women who have children and the women themselves have drug problems. All I can tell you, Ruth, is that there's no known research right now that indicates that crystal meth is a teratogen or that it's transferring across that blood-brain barrier. There's no research on that right now. And, of course, we're encouraging all pregnant women to not use any drugs or alcohol or tobacco. And we're encouraging a lot of our clients to connect with my friends at the table there to have additional support and assistance to get through a pregnancy in a healthy way. So.
Terry Shillington, thank you for your presentation and the raft of information. I'm interested in the political angle to this, and I hear provincial premiers including crystal meth in some of their interprovincial conversations. And from what I hear today, this is an issue of education and enforcement. If you were premier for a day, what changes would you make? Is there a political angle to this? Are there political changes that provincial people need to make, or is it just enforcement and education?
Gary, where are you speaking next? And I'm going to come. What would I do if I was premier for the day? Oh, geez. You know, Gary, go ahead. Or Terry.
Well, I didn't intend to stump you. I just wondered if there's a political angle to this. Are there things that the province needs to do? And why are provincial premiers talking about it when, as I hear you talk about it, it's more municipal and local at educational and enforcement level? So.
Well, I think certainly there a lot of action has been taken at the local community levels, but also there has been action taken provincially. There is a cross-ministry right now consisting of Justice, ADAC, Native American groups, all across government trying to work together to not only just encourage enforcement and information, but also to look at treatment issues and what can be done in communities. I honestly don't see it as just a community response issue. I do see that government is aware of the issue and is trying to get other ministries involved in trying to respond to the issue. Maybe I'll let Eldon speak to that as well.
We have a coordinated Alberta response to methamphetamine right now. It's part of a broader Alberta drug strategy, and it's the coordinated Alberta response to methamphetamine encompasses the cross-ministry working group that Gwen referred to, so there are a number of key stakeholders and partners in that. These groups really are providing sort of an umbrella coordination of activities around the province. Gwen talked about the local community drug action coalitions. I mean, that's just one example. If you want to give an overview of some of the actions that's taking place with these coordinating bodies, again, I would refer you to, it's on the ADAC website, ADAC.com. So if you want more detailed information on the variety of actions and initiatives and whatnot, please go there. But one of the things I do want to mention is in regards to these community coalitions, they probably emerged only 3 or 4 years ago. The first one was up in the Yellowhead Corridor,
the Edson Hinton area was sort of the where the crystal meth problem appeared and became quite significant about 3 or 4 years ago. So we saw the emergence of a community coalition. These coalitions have now spread throughout the entire province. We now have probably between 40 and 50 communities in Alberta who have drug action coalitions. We have, I think, some of the best models right here in southern Alberta. We've got excellent coalitions happening here in Lethbridge as well as in Tabor. We also have coalitions in Brooks and Medicine Hat. And as Glenn was saying, there's another one emerging as we speak in Clairsville. That's just one example of the type of initiative that comes out of these out of the Alberta Coordinated Response. So they're looking at a variety of issues that include legislation, regulation, partnerships, leadership and accountability, information and awareness, and research. So, like I said, it's too detailed for me to go into now, but please take a look at the at our website on that one.
Judy Reynolds, and I'm one of the friends from the table. I wanted to ask a question. We all know that prevention is really the most important thing here, but when it comes to treatment, we find that there's a lot of people falling through the cracks because when there is a window of opportunity, getting a client to treatment can take as much as 2 to 3 months, and that window of opportunity is gone. Is it going to be any better for the children than it is for the adults that we're finding?
Okay, thank you, Judy. Certainly, I think for those of us that work on the front lines, there's always that frustration that when there is that window of opportunity, a lot of times you have to break down a lot of walls to get that client there quickly, and that is a real issue that we face on the front lines. One of the nice things about our community and the way that agencies are working together is that Fort McLeod Detox has now agreed to take people on an extended stay, and the Southern Elkhair Manor, another funded agency of ADAC, is also trying to work with us to provide beds for clients in between detox and treatment so that there isn't that gap. With youth, Judy, a really positive thing that is happening is that we're opening this month, opened up more beds. There's 24 beds now for youth. And certainly it comes down to not only treatment beds that are available in the community, but what we can do as community members to support people in our community. So I hear what you're saying, that there is that need there.
Thanks, Kathy, for letting me ask the second question. Sometimes before, I was down talking to some police officers, and I said how pleased I was that we didn't have much prostitution in Lethbridge. And the guy said, Ed, if you won't find them in church. Come downtown. What is the incidence of pushers in this community that develop this insidious drug in young people? They must. Is it a lot of it, or is it minimal?
I think that's a good question. I hate to kind of schlep it off onto somebody else, but really the police are who we need to be asking to get those numbers. When people walk through our doors, some of the people that we talk to have been involved in dealing the drug. But when people walk in through our doors, they're at that stage of change where they're ready to seek treatment and make some major changes in their lives. So you need to be asking those questions of people that are working on the street and are seeing what is happening in the street. And I'm sure if we had a Lethbridge police officer here today, they could shed some interesting light on that.
I'm Trevor Page. Gwen, thank you very much for your presentation. You mentioned now that you've got 24 beds for people that need treatment. how many people are there that need treatment right now in Lethbridge? Number one, and in southern Alberta, number two. Thank you. Yeah, that need treatment. I mean, 24 are in beds, but there are more than that that need treatment. How many should be in bed right now being treated? One in Lethbridge, two in southern Alberta. Thank you.
Well, you know, that is a tough question to answer because we don't know. First of all, many of our clients that come through our door find that they do okay doing treatment in their home community, so they don't need to be in a treatment bed per se. I guess this is going back to Judy's question. You know, how many clients are, I guess you're saying, how many clients do I see that should be in a treatment bed and we can't get them into that treatment bed? Certainly our treatment beds are full, and that can sometimes be difficult when you're working on the front line. But I guess I just wanted to say, to provide hope to people, that all is not lost, and a lot of people, especially stimulant drug users, do better doing the recovery in the community, and they don't necessarily need an inpatient treatment bed to do that recovery. So in my experience on the front line, when I need to get a person into detox and into a treatment bed, I've been able to do that. I guess that's all I can fall back on, Trevor, is my own experience.
I may ask a second question. Gwen, you mentioned in your talk that users talk about meth as being a poor man's cocaine. It seems to me that not knowing a lot about the chemistry, still it seems to me that it's a pretty cheap thing to turn out, and that even at half the price of cocaine or heroin, that somebody's making a lot of money, and here money raises its ugly head again in producing this stuff. Is it difficult for the police to track down labs that are producing this stuff, and have they done so, and have we a track record here in Lethbridge or in this area that you can relate to, that you can tell us about?
I did pull some 2003 Lethbridge police stats. I don't have anything recent, and I think the Lethbridge Police Service would be the person to ask for those stats. I couldn't give you anything recent, and I think they'd be the best ones to respond to that.
Thank you. John Boris again. How bad do you feel that you have failed someone? I'm talking to you, I guess. Because of all kinds of things. And then how much joy do you get out of being able to help somebody? Say, you know, to yourself, not bragging to anybody, but to yourself, we did something. When I was practicing law, I remember at first I used to do everything came in the door. I had to have it then. And I remember the divorces came in, and I used divorces for about 10 years. And then I quit accepting them. Number one, I had more clients coming in, but that wasn't the main reason. You just couldn't win, which no matter who you acted for, whether it was the wife or the husband, you don't win. And I'm just wondering how many situations you have such as that. No matter what you do, somehow you can't win. And when you get to that, where do you go?
Well, that question just gives me a great opportunity to talk about the process of change that happens with people when they're trying to change something in their lives. And certainly our experience has proven that not too many people in our community like to work with addicted people. You know, doctors, psychiatrists, they don't like working with addicted people because you don't sprinkle the magic fairy dust and they're cured in 2 days. It doesn't happen that way. But in my experience, I find addicted people, people that are struggling with an addiction, to be very creative, sensitive, insightful people who have many different ways of solving their own problems. And even if they, it brings to mind the question of, what is success? You know, is success, somebody who gets off the drug first time around, first time they try and they stay clean and sober for 20 years? Is that success, or is it success when they walk through our door for the first time? You know, what is success? And we see successes every single day in our office. So it's a process of change. Change happens over time, and one small step forward is a success for our clients.
Bob Anderson. I've been wondering if marijuana plays any role in your treatment process. I've heard that it might. Could you comment on it as part of your operation and whether it's it helps in what you're doing?
That's a very good question as well. It came up at our table at lunch about are we seeing polydrug use? And we certainly are seeing that. Gone are the days where we will see somebody who just has an alcohol problem or just has a cocaine problem or just has a marijuana problem. What we're seeing a lot of now in the clinic is polydrug use with a lot of underlying concurrent disorder stuff happening. So the cases that we're seeing now are more complicated. A lot of times clients will use what we call the marijuana maintenance program, and when they quit using cocaine or heroin, their drug of choice, they will use marijuana to kind of ease those uneasy feelings that they have after they withdraw from the drug of choice that they're using. But certainly we're also seeing that clients, once they start to get further along in the change process, that they are interested in abstaining from marijuana as well. So I don't know if I'm answering that question, but we are seeing polydrug use. Some clients do use marijuana to try to ease their symptoms of withdrawal from other drugs. And the further along they get into the change process, the more open they are to looking at quitting marijuana as well.
Jill Tokas, thank you so much, Gwen, for a really outstanding presentation about which I knew nothing before on the subject. And what is cigarette smoking? How is cigarette smoking and the incidence of that related to drug abuse in general and the meth topic in particular?
That's an excellent question, and tobacco has been a huge area of interest for ADAC recently, and also in terms of research and what is happening between tobacco use in relation to other drug use. And we used to advise our clients to just tackle one problem at a time and stop crystal meth use and continue to smoke if that, you know, that we figured that it was easier for clients that way. And the new research is showing us that it's actually better to stop smoking while you're trying to stop other drugs, such as crystal meth. A lot of times for clients, cigarette smoking is a trigger for using other drugs. And also nicotine is a very addictive substance that keeps the addictive process going. So we are actively working in our outpatient and inpatient treatment centers to tackle the tobacco issue as well and encourage our clients to stop smoking right along with the other drugs that they're using. I just had a couple final comments to make about things that are going on in our community. If you're interested in this issue, TCAD, the Tabor Community Against Drugs Coalition, is having a wonderful conference called Hooked on Hope. It's at the Tabor Heritage Inn on November 25th. They're having Steve Walton speak, and Steve is a retired detective with 24 years of experience with Calgary Police Service. And if you want to know about drugs and the incidence of use and drug pushing and all of those questions, Steve is a wonderful resource to get those questions answered. And we're also having Alvin Law there and Dr. David Cook. And Dr. David Cook, as I said before, is a professor of pharmacology at the U of A and knows this stuff inside and out. So a great high level of expertise is going to be at that conference. That's November 24th in Tabor at the Heritage Inn. It starts at 8:30 with opening remarks, and it's done at 3:30. So if you're interested in that, I do have a couple of brochures up here. And then also keep your eye out in the Lethbridge Herald for events going on in our community during National Addictions Awareness Week, the third week of November. There will be other public presentations being made about crystal meth at that time. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much to Gwen Reimer for a really wonderful presentation, and thanks to all of you for being here. I want to let you know that, two things. First of all, a reminder of next week when Jason Unger will be talking about land use and when we have a say and when we don't have a say. And also to remind you to be sure and check the new SACPA website, www.sacpa, that's SACPA.ca. And that will have presentations on it as well as upcoming events and just a whole host of information. So have a good day.